I just give the floor now to Jackie for reaction, own ideas, whatever, as brief as possible, please.
Since I did come all the way from the United States and had weeks to prepare, you're going to have to let me say a few things. Kate inspired me this morning to start with a little story. In 1995, I was in The Hague for the oral arguments before the court in order to help out with media outreach and NGO organizing and so on. And I was with my colleague John Burroughs, who was helping out with the legal coordination, working with the states. Now, in 1983, I was one of about 1,500 people who were arrested for nonviolently blockading at the nuclear weapons laboratory at Livermore in California. And about 240 of us went to trial together in a very unusual joint trial, and we tried to argue that we were nonviolently acting to prevent the commission of grave international offenses, which were being perpetrated by the workers at the nuclear weapons laboratory. And although I didn't yet know him at the time, John Burroughs, who was a law student at the time, was the chief author of our international law defense. And I don't have time to tell you the story of that trial. It was very interesting, but it was very informative to our political work over the years. Now, fast forward to the hearings before the court. Well, by coincidence, I had been arrested again at Livermore in August on the Hiroshima anniversary in 1995, and I had a trial the day before I left to go to The Hague. It was a trial by this time on a traffic infraction, willfully remaining in a crosswalk when ordered to leave, something like that. And as it turned out, so we were preparing, again, an international law defense, and as it turned out, the law enforcement authorities did not show up so that there was no trial. The trial was canceled. And it turned out the judge, who was a visiting judge, actually was familiar with the ICJ and was very interested. In any case, I sent out a press release that before I left saying, starting tomorrow, courts around the world, from the Municipal Traffic Court in Livermore, California, to the International Court of Justice in The Hague, will be considering the legal status of nuclear weapons. So, in any case, I got to The Hague, and it was most amazing, personally for me, and for John, I think, as well, to spend 2 weeks listening to governments present the same arguments that my lawyers, including John, had been making on my behalf 15 years earlier. And in fact, John was helping and working with those governments. So just goes to show, well, none of us could have planned what happened, right? Okay, there's my little story. Now, one of the things that's valuable about being at an international meeting like this is really hearing and understanding the very different perspectives that we have coming from the different countries and political systems and so on and traditions that we come from. And so you're going to hear a little bit of difference. I think Alan very much reflects the New Zealand experience, and I very much reflect the American experience, where I have to tell you it is it is difficult to overstate how extremely under siege and paralyzed in many ways we feel in the United States at this time, and perhaps a little bit hopeless, although we never give up. The question of returning to the court raises in my mind a fundamental question about something going on in the United States, which is the very viability of the United Nations. And because it is under attack by the U.S. government and because the American people don't know anything about it. So let me go through some of my points here. Let me, of course, 10 years ago, I want to remind us what the International Court of Justice found unanimously, these words. There exists an obligation to pursue in good faith and bring to a conclusion negotiations leading to nuclear disarmament in all its aspects under strict and effective international control, which, of course, as has been stated by many others, is the authoritative interpretation of Article 6. The ICJ's opinion was, in part, I believe, the culmination, well, not I believe, it was the culmination of a massive international civil society campaign, which I believe was motivated in part by the sense of hope and possibility that arose in the wake of the unexpected collapse of the Soviet Union and the end of the Cold War. And the opinion, in turn, inspired civil society and governments to press for meaningful progress towards implementation of the Article 6 disarmament obligation, including the 13 practical steps agreed to as the outcome of the 2000 NPT Review Conference. And today, as recognized by the Blix Commission on Weapons of Mass Destruction, the nuclear weapons states, led by the U.S., are demonstrably violating their Article 6 disarmament obligations. In this sense, it seems like an opportune moment to return to the court for a follow-up opinion. But in light of changed geopolitical circumstances following the September 11th terrorist attacks, including, and I can't state this strongly enough, an almost unbelievably arrogant, militaristic, and unilateral U.S. government, the sense of hope that appeared with the end of the Cold War has been replaced in many quarters by a sense of fear, powerlessness, and cynicism. Now, originally when we were discussing this panel, I think we had envisioned it as a kind of a facilitated discussion, and because we don't have time to do that, I want to pose some questions to think about in our ongoing discussions. The global nuclear abolition movement could really use a unifying campaign with an objective that may be achievable in the short term, but I think we face some really tough questions. First of all, fundamental question, what are we trying to accomplish? Simply saying the abolition of nuclear weapons is not enough, I believe, in today's world. Is campaigning for a return to the ICJ the right vehicle? We seem to have a good chance of a positive outcome, but will it make any difference? And can we convince people that it will make a difference? Can we mobilize global public opinion again on the scale that will be required to pull this off? And I'm most interested in this last question. Is return to the ICJ a useful and viable vehicle for raising public awareness about the grave nuclear dangers that we face and their interconnectedness with other issues? Now, obviously, this is different in different countries, and I'm very encouraged to hear today apparently the rising resonance that the question of trying to get the U.S. nuclear weapons out of NATO countries has, and the possibility of that as a wedge issue, and certainly the issues in the U.K. And the possibility of major public mobilization against the Trident replacement seem like very hopeful, positive developments that could, in fact, be very significantly benefit from another ICJ opinion. But I want to just make a footnote here, and that I think we cannot be, and I think there's a danger here in some places. We can't be naive and think that simply getting another legal opinion from the court is going to solve our problem, because we have to at least acknowledge some of the other drivers of this seemingly intransigent nuclear threat, and that would certainly include corporate profiteers and transnational corporate profiteers. We have many dimensions to the nuclear problem. One of our avenues is the legal avenue, but we have to also, and we've talked a lot about the immorality of nuclear weapons, and I was trying to think about whether corporate profits and greed are part of immorality or whether they're some other separate category. But I think we do need to consider those things. And I just want to offer, and I hope you don't think this is a tangent, but I don't think it is, what we're trying to do in the U.S. this year in connection with the August anniversaries of the U.S. atomic bombings is calling for no nukes, no wars, end war profiteering, and support indigenous rights, because August 9th is the United Nations Day of Indigenous Peoples. And we're specifically focusing on Bechtel Corporation and asking people to go to nuclear weapons sites and Bechtel corporate headquarters, because this draws the link between anti-nuclear, anti-war, global justice movements and connects the dots, and particularly connects to the Iraq War. Because why? Bechtel was involved in developing the atomic bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and today manages most of the nuclear weapons sites in the U.S. Bechtel has built the majority of nuclear power plants in the U.S. and around the world. Bechtel built the petrochemical plants that allowed Iraq to make chemical weapons used against Iran. And Bechtel was originally contracted to build Iran's first nuclear power plant. And this is interesting. According to a top official with the new Iraqi government Ministry of Education, quote, "The impression we get is that Bechtel is more powerful than the U.S. Army." Okay, so I just mentioned that because I think certainly we're not going to ask the court to rule on Bechtel. But we need to keep in mind parallel campaigns that are going to connect the dots and make this pursue some of these other avenues to take on nuclear weapons. Okay, so in my view, then, the question or questions posed to the court must be easily understood by the public, by the judges, by the members of the General Assembly, and by members of national legislatures. And the question or questions must be framed in the way that is most likely to elicit a favorable opinion, bearing in mind the incredible U.S. intimidation that we know happened the last time. We can only expect that to be more intense. So with that in mind, I think we should be working from the cleanest, clearest, most unanimous finding of the 1996 opinion, so it makes most sense to me to focus on the good faith implementation of the disarmament obligations. And I am very afraid, as someone who deals a lot with nuclear doctrine, that if we get into these use doctrines, there's a great danger of muddying the waters. These doctrines, I'll talk about the U.S., are complex, they're difficult to understand, and partly they're secret. And I think that the governments of the nuclear weapon states can and will fall back on that, as they always do. Well, we can't tell you what we know, so that isn't really what our doctrine is. It may seem like that to you. Although in that sense, their very existence, the existence of these doctrines, seems to contravene the meaning of good faith. So I think that that's our strongest case. And another concern I have is that if the use doctrines are singled out for individual rulings, I think it may seem to give weight to partial or limited support for certain aspects of disarmament, which may derail us from the main objective. One thing that I have picked up on here, and I wonder if this is the case, if the possible resurgent movement in Europe regarding getting U.S. nuclear weapons out of NATO states, including perhaps a campaign for a potential return to the ICJ, and tied into anti-Iraq war sentiment, could spark a resurgent movement in the United States in the same way that European opposition to the deployment of cruise and Pershing missiles in the early 1980s, I think, actually caught on later in the United States. Finally, throughout this conference and in other recent international forums, I've seen two emerging themes that seem to resonate. One is this question of good faith, and we're going to hear more about the mayor's good faith challenge later today, and this recurring idea about redefining security in human and sustainable terms, and we heard again about the IPPNW Australia ICANN campaign. So I think if we can locate a return to the court campaign more broadly in those two themes, then I think we'll have a greater chance of success. And I want to end with a very short quote. I was trying to think of a good quote. At the Vancouver Peace Forum, there was an exhibit about transforming war to peace through art at the Anthropology Museum. And there was an outstanding quote, and people were talking about youth here. Well, we were once young, and when some of us were once young, Jimi Hendrix was very popular. And there's a quote from Jimi Hendrix, which I think says it all. "When the power of love overcomes the love of power, the world will know peace."